little heart-to-heart talk with an FBI agent the other day, and I didn't have to say hardly anything because, you know, I believe in 14-5, the five words. Let's hear what this FBI man had to say. Well, Mr. FBI man, how do you feel about Ruby Ridge and Waco? Remember that? You guys and Janet Reno, what you did? How do you feel about that?
That I'm my own person.
Talk is cheap, especially coming from the Bureau.
How about action?
Yeah, how about that? Come on, FBI man. It
means everything to you, huh? The Bureau?
Maybe. Maybe it's the only reason I got forgiven every fucking one.
I'm
just that fucking sad.
I asked you a question. God damn it.
I can't walk away from the hunt for the most twisted minds on God's green earth.
I don't believe it.
Or maybe I've just seen too many dead eyes of kids that ain't never grown up.
That's right.
But I'll tell you this. When Weaver's wife got killed at Ruby Ridge, and all those kids went up in flames in Waco, I nearly resigned right then and there. I was so goddamn ashamed of the FBI.
It's hard on
them, FBI. Fidelity, bravery, integrity. Those words used to mean something.
Yeah, those words used to mean something.
So,
huh?
I plan on splitting it into three main parts.
What the hell's going
on? The first one is...
Anyhow, there you got the admission from at least one FBI agent of feeling very responsible for Ruby Ridge and Waco. I'll give him that. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the SHU. If you don't have your April donations in, you're probably going to get cut off because the webmaster says that at a certain date, you won't get your secret Dick Tracy password. Yeah, so get it in there, man. And if all of a sudden you're not getting the show, it's either because I screwed up and didn't credit you for paying or sending in a donation, or you didn't send it in at all. So anyhow, there we go. And go up to resist.com. You know, I got guys write me and they say, well, I'd like for you to copy this book and that book and send it to me. Well, you just go on up there to resist.com and download any of those books we put up there, PDF, and photocopy them out. Some of the prisons are more friendly to copies. They'll take books too, but we've got those PDF copies of a whole lot of books up there that you can download free and just cost you the price of printing it out, copying, and then you could send that to a prisoner just like you'd send a book. Okay? Well, Danny Mahon sent me a note here that he got from their attorney that's doing the appeals on the case for Dennis Mahon. Said, "Dear Dennis, I have a couple of updates for you. First, as reflected in the enclosed motion, the government is asking the court to extend its filing deadline to August 15, 2014. Generally, the court grants unopposed extension requests, and I anticipate that it will do so in this instance, although the court did include language in its prior extension order discouraging further extensions. The second, the enclosed email from John Boyle, indicates that the government intends to try to have Dan's firearms returned to him. I hope that works out." Well, it should. He was judged innocent in the case. "Dan informs us that the visitation matter appears to have been straightened out, and I hope that actual visits begin soon and continue frequently. As I mentioned to you long ago, the appeals process is largely about waiting, and it appears likely that we will do a good deal more of that. You have shown great patience and understanding, for which we are all grateful. Please feel free to call or write at any time. So there you go. So the appeal that the attorneys put in for Dennis Mahon is going to be way down the road, but I wouldn't expect anything exciting to come out of it. And I want to make a note of it, because it's a very difficult thing for me when I've been friends with someone for a long time, you know, and also I've been involved somewhat politically and so forth when something like this comes up. Now, I'm at this time giving Dennis Mahon the benefit of the doubt that he may possibly, there may be a twist in this thing. I don't excuse anybody for sending or planting a bomb and using alcohol and drunkenness as an excuse, because there is no excuse for that kind of activity for anybody who, well, that immediately takes him out of the realm of a lone wolf, if in fact it is true. Sending a explosive device through the mail that anybody could get a hold of, whether it's a mailman or whether it's a pretty white secretary or what, this just happened to be opened by a black guy, and fortunately he wasn't killed, because Mahon would probably be getting a needle if he did. So anyhow, I have a big problem with these kind of things, because that particular case caused me a lot of trouble, being raided by swarms of ATF looking for bombs and crap on me, and I'm about as clean as anybody could be, but yet just having a friend or a casual associate that goes off on their own reservation can drag you or me or anybody into it. And I won't forgive Dennis Mahon for that. So we'll see how this appeal turns out, but you have to be extremely careful of who you're dealing with, no matter how much you like them, because people are prone to just screw up. That's their nature. And they can use women, wine, women, and song as the excuse. But there is no excuse for bad habits. And anyhow, that's my comment on that particular situation. In the meantime, I'll send a letter now and then, and maybe a few bucks to Dennis Mahon, but he's not out of the woods as far as I'm concerned with me. Forget about the government. Every act like this gives the press miles of yardage to turn the general population against us. Now, I'm not saying we should be out there pleading with the general population to agree with us anyhow, but still, when people do crazy bad things and not in an act of actual warfare, then it flashes back on everybody. So I'm surprised, as I went around town the last few days, that I didn't get to ask a couple of questions. But fortunately, nobody pinned me up against the wall and hey, Metzger, are you involved with that crazy guy down there in Kansas? So anyhow, so far so good. But still, generally, they use any little bit, anything they can to smear our side of the lone wolf side. And of course, the lone wolves get smeared with right-wing activity. I told you yesterday that I think it's Occidental, whatever, put out a thing, named several guys who had done some pretty stupid things, and tried to paste them onto Lone Wolf. Well, that's not possible. Every one of the guys that they mentioned were attached to an organization. They may not have been at the time they did it, but they had been in the past, the recent past. I think it was, his name was Furrow, wasn't it? That came down to L.A. and went on a shooting rampage at a Jewish day school center and killed a Filipino postman. Well, these guys come out of organizations. Every one that's going on a rampage like that come out of an organization. They didn't come from Tommy's house. They didn't come from my lone wolf instruction manual or suggestion manual. They came from organizations, and then they went out and did something. So right wing or white nationalists, don't try to lay that shit on me, because people who listen to me know exactly what I'm referring to, and I talk as straight as I can. If what somebody does is not logical or makes any sense or has any kind of Aryan morality to it, it can't be something that I have espoused. So get that straight. People like Glenn Miller Cross never liked Tom Metzger, because they know I know the score, and I know they're, I look into whenever something happens, I go to the court records and all that and look it over and see what happened. Yeah, you know, I was listening to my favorite rogue progressive the other night. it gets sort of funny sometimes, but anyhow, he was talking about the shootout at Greensboro. And I'm pretty familiar with that. In fact, I put a headline on my newspaper at the time, "The Shot Heard Round the World, Greensboro, the Shootout." But he didn't say anything about that the man who caused it was an FBI informant, an FBI agent, contract agent. How come they always leave that out? I forgot what his name now is. I have the book in my hand that put it all together. It was written by Elizabeth Wheaton, Wheaton, and it was printed down there in Georgia. It's quite a book. University of Georgia Press. Well, you see, the communists, and these were communists. Too bad, because some of them were doctors and had gone down south to try to help out people with black lungs disease and stuff, which I commend them for that. I don't give a shit whether they're communists or not. But they were baiting the Klan and the National Socialists. They'd gone out to their meeting hall and tried to bait them into a fight before this happened. And so they were having a get-together, these Reds that had come down from the north, and the Klan and the National Socialists decided to just do the same thing to them, bug them. So they had several cars drive in a row past, just single file past this place where they were picnicking. But what the Klansmen and the National Socialists didn't know was that the lead car contained a part-time house painter as a cover and an FBI instigator driving his truck. And, of course, the Reds were screaming and all that. We've all been through that kind of stuff. And lo and behold, he slams on the brakes and scream something like, "You want the Klan, now they're here." Well, nobody else could proceed around him, even if they wanted to. So all these National Socialists and Klansmen were stuck right there, and the Reds were armed. And the Reds started shooting. And the Klansmen just calmly got out of their car, went to the trunk, pulled their weapons out, and fired back and killed two or three of them. And that's why they never went to prison for it, because it was total self-defense. But the reason those Reds are dead is not because that the National Socialists and the Klan didn't want to bug them, maybe bloody their nose a little bit like that, like we've all done in the past, but they weren't there to kill them. But the FBI man wanted them killed. He knew what would happen when he slammed on the brakes to where the whole thing come to a stop right in front of all these, within about 50 or 100 feet of these Reds that were out there picnicking. He knew what would happen. Well, he never did a day in jail. But he's working for the government. Yeah, he's working for national defense. That's how these things are set up. Now, you can get this book, probably get it used now, Codename Green Kill, the 1979 Greensboro killings. Like I say, I was privy to what happened there, and I communicated and helped out some of the guys that were charged that they tried to hang. They really tried. I think they came back and tried to try them twice, but they failed. So that's... And if you doubt what's in the book, then you can go to the courts and dig out the files. What's his name? The fat man, Harold Covington, just happened to... He was supposed to be there, but all of a sudden he wasn't there. And in the trial, it came out that an ATF agent by the name of Butkovich was his handler. So if you're talking about Glenn Miller, you got Covington, you got several of these kind of guys that are still messing around. I mean, you know, still screwing around with the right wing. And you wonder why the right wing never wins. How could they win when they keep taking, even after they have exposed, of which they should have exposed before through lie detectors and so forth, but we ain't into that newfangled stuff like lie detectors. Shit. We just ask the guy to cross his heart and swear to the baby Jesus. He's a good man. He'll never betray us. That's all we need. Yeah. Anyhow, the right wing will keep repeating this. No, they're not done. They've got other weirdos in the right wing. They're going to do the same thing like Miller did, or Mr. Cross. That was his FBI cover name and so forth. Anyhow, thought I'd pass that along to you. If you're in one of these groups, you can be set up so easy your whole life can be turned upside down, and it won't change this war we're in one bit, except to make it harder. It's hard enough when we do everything right. But when people continue to do everything wrong, it's bad news. And our enemy, oh, they love it. And the progressives, you know, they lie too. You know, the right wing lies, the left wing lies. Everybody, most people do lie. Believe me, if they get their ass in a jam, they really lie. And when the progressives, and a lot of the progressives have a little more education than the right wing, when they say those right wingers are stupid, well, a good percentage of them are stupid. I mean, that's obvious for what they do. I wanted to mention a couple of books I have here. I've got a lot of books. And I got to get organized one of these years. But anyhow, my father gave me a book way back. Whenever a Jew, a Christian, whoever, or a black says to you, well, what's so much better are you, the white man, than the black man? I think that it's very simple. You just pull out these titles and say, go down to the library and get them. These are not overtly racist books. My father gave me this one, A History of Western Technology by Frederick Klemm, K-L-E-M-M. takes all down through history and the advancement and the retardation, of course, of Western technology due to Christianity. I think we'd have probably been on the moon in the 1800s if it hadn't been for Jewish Christianity. But anyhow, and then I've got another book. It's called The Short History of Technology, from the earliest times to 1900. When your kid comes home from school with a bunch of this stuff, well, we're equal. Blacks are equal. They create a whole bunch of stuff. Well, wait a minute. What did they create? What did they invent? What are the blacks using today that they invented? Now, sometimes they come up with a stoplight and peanuts and things like that. But they have. There's no long list of what technology that full-blooded blacks have invented. Almost nothing. Some mulattoes have invented some things. With the white genes, they hijack the genes and then they get a little smarter. Some of them get dumber, I guess. I don't know. But anyhow, if you're not telling your kids, well, I want you to read these books here, or books like them, especially when they're older, haven't been tampered with by the creeps. And this was another book that was given to me by my father, and I keep it around. So whenever anybody says to me, well, what's so great about the white race? Yeah, I say, well, it's very simple. Read these books. I'm not going to read them to you or read them for you. If you don't have the brains and the wherewithal to read them yourself, then screw you. You don't really care at all. But it's in technology. Do we worship technology? No, we don't worship anything. We shouldn't be worshiping anything. We have reverence for things like nature and all that. I have reverence for my car because it keeps running. When it quits running, I won't have any reverence for it. I might even shoot it. But still, it's technology. If the white man has got anything, and he uses the technology both for advancement and retardation of the white race. I mean, yeah, because so much of Western technology has been diverted by the ruling class into war-making machinery. And there's some byproducts of that that other things get developed along with it, but it's not worth it for all the people who have to die. Now, if you want to, the one thing, you can look at National Socialist Germany in the 30s and 40s. That if you want to see technology really take off, it was really, really, really taken off there. And the trouble is, so much was diverted to war machinery and killing. But without the restraints of the church and all this other gobbledygook, National Socialist technology took off like a skyrocket. We're still benefiting by the developments of the National Socialists in that short period of time where they really went balls to the wall on technology. So you can use that too. You can say, I'm not here to argue about Hitler and the Jews and all that. I'm here to say, just look at all the stuff that they developed. And we wouldn't have been on the moon for another 40 years probably, without the German research and the German technology and the research on even cigarette smoking. They had it all wrapped up and figured out way back in the 30s. And when the so-called Allies, when the winners got into Germany, the British grabbed all that research, took it back to England and locked it up. Didn't put it out. So, wait a minute. They say Hitler was responsible for 6 million? Well, just think of how many million cigarette smoking is responsible for. And if they had all the research and had gone to work to minimize or eliminate smoking back in the 40s and from then on up till now, just think of the amount of white people that would still have been walking around. I mean, come on. So do you ever hear any of these progressives talking about that? Of course not. But you can remind people when you talk to them. Do you know, just say, I've done that. I said, you know who really bailed the cat on tobacco? Well, let's see, there was those, some doctors, and then there was these people, and then the government was looking into it. No, it wasn't. It was National Socialist Germany that had it all figured out way back. But the ruling class, the predatory capitalists, didn't want that out there because they intended to make billions from cigarette smoking. Billions. Yeah. And then even tell you in the ads it was good for you. I remember those ads. Old Golds and Chesterfields. I used to, when I was in the Army, there was, over in Germany, there were four of us to a room in our radio station, and we had, there was one man there by the name of, we were all only about 19 or 20. His name was Donald Barta. I'll never forget him, from Ohio. And he smoked Chesterfields. Every morning, he'd get up and sit on the edge of his cot, his army cot, and cough for 10 to 15 minutes off and on, coughing. And I would say to him, I said, don't you think you ought to quit smoking those Chesterfields? Oh, no, I'm not going to quit smoking. And I'll bet you $50 that he was dead 25 years ago, if not sooner. So next time you get somebody bad-mouthing Germany, National Socialist Germany, remind them of things like that. I never hear the right-wingers doing that. There's all kinds of stuff you can throw back in their face, you know? But they don't do it. They just talk about the Jews. If we didn't have the Jews, you know, if we'd shoot all the Jews, if we'd kill all the Jews. Believe me, if you killed all the Jews, there'd be just as crappy of corrupt people among our own race emerge and take their place. They're already there, you know. But the right wing is still screaming, it's just the Jews. Some of these guys, they go on for every day on a radio show. It's the Jews, man. The weather's bad. It's the Jews, man. I lost some money at the casino. Well, it's all the Jews' fault. Well, you didn't have to go to the casino, did you? Well, that's beside the point. It's those dirty Jews, man. And on this technology, I slipped a note into this technology book that my father gave me. It's about 500 pages. And the other one I talked about was about 200. But anyhow, this was a prisoner back in 1998. He said, some time ago I read someone quoting from the Almanac that 90% or so of all major inventions were invented by whites. If you have access to this material, could you please send me a copy? Thanks. Well, I'd have to get it to you in a pickup truck because it's all over the place. They don't have to come out and say white. You know where, you know, the guy from Sweden invented something 50 years ago. Oh, it must have been a nigger Swede. You know he's white. And this man is right. Probably 90%, maybe not quite that much. The rest is spread among non-whites, because sometimes the Asians come up with some good stuff, and even the Indians come up with some good stuff, and like that. We're not saying nobody else ever did anything. That's the wrong way to argue at all. But 90% was white Europeans, no matter what country they were in. So, anyhow, pound that into your kid's head. Get them reading things about technology and like that. And then the way I worked it with my kids, I'd say, well, who do you think invented that? well, I don't know, Pops. Well, I said that was a white guy, and I'd get his name out of the book, out of the encyclopedia. Who invented the television? Oh, right here it is. This guy, he was white. Who invented the automobiles? There were white guys all over the world, in France and Germany and England and the United States and Australia, and all over the world invented the automobile. Pretty close to the same time. Well, who invented the airplane? Well, it's right there. You don't have to go around screaming, white power, white power. It's right there in the books. That's all you have to do if you're not some whacked out Christ insanity person saying you got to study about, I don't want you studying this stuff about technology, kid, because the earth's going to come to an end pretty quick anyhow, and I want you to learn about the baby Jesus and all that kind of stuff, and make sure you go to the local mind control center. That's, of course, what I call churches. You got mind control centers on every corner, so make sure you get there. Like my folks, you got to go to Bible school or we'll whip your ass. So I went to Bible school, but I never really bought the whole picture. I didn't get out of the Christian thing until 1980, but I was always sort of tongue-in-cheeking it. Well, you get in an argument sometime with a black person that's not a nut, just say, well, who invented that car you're driving? What you mean? Well, I mean, who invented it? You know, the white man invented that car. You got a wristwatch on there? Who invented that wristwatch? Martin Luther King? No. The white man invented those watches. There's a motorcycle over there. Who invented that motorcycle? Well, I guess. And just go right down the line. Everything you're using, Mr. Nigger, was either invented by a white man or in later days some of the Asians. What the hell have you invented to make you equal to anybody? You're not equal to anybody. I was just listening to the late night radio, as I do all night, or most of the night. I sleep a while, and then I wake up and listen and record and stuff. And this guy was on the radio talking about helping the poor people of Africa. Jeez. Do you remember that when you was a kid, when adults would say, eat all your food because kids in Africa or other places are starving? I'll bet you've heard that before. Anyhow, he was talking about Kenya. Now, he's got himself a foundation. Uh-huh. And they treat him so nice on the radio. Well, what do you do in your foundation? Well, I traveled down to Africa, and I went to Kenya. And there's a place there by one of the big cities in Kenya that geographically is the size of Central Park in New York City. And there's 1.5 million people living in that area. 1.5 million. Can you imagine 1.5 million people camped out at Central Park in New York? I've been to Central Park many, many times in the old days, and I wouldn't want to be there if there was 1.5 million. It's enough if they have a rock concert to get 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000. 1.5 million. Yeah, and they've got, there's no sewers. No sewers? Yeah, the shit just runs down the street. Water? Oh, it's all polluted. All polluted. Well, what do you do? Well, I set up tours. Yeah, I set up tours for Americans, mostly talented, wealthy Americans, because it cost them. He didn't even say what it cost. That led me to believe it was a lot of money to go on his tours. But you have to be a talented person, because you're going over there to help the niggers. people have been trying to help them for as long as the white race has been around in Africa and gone down there. Well, anyhow, they put you up in a nice hotel with nice clean sheets and a nice dining room and a nice bar. And then they pick you up in a bus and take you into the super ghetto in the morning. And depending on your talents, you go this way or that way. And if you're an artist, you go in there and teach niggers how to paint. These are people that don't even have enough food to eat at any time. And there's shit in the street, and you got to teach them to paint. Or probably the most effective thing they do, which I don't think is effective, but some people would say if you're good with tools and a carpenter and so forth, you help build them schools. Well, that may be good for a very small percentage that may get enough education to decide, hey, you know, there's no chain around this place, there's no chain link fence, I can walk out of here anytime I want to and just take my chances. What have I got to lose? But why would 1.5 million people just sit there? And they're having, well, and the biggest percentage of them are under 12 years old, too. That's another thing. The biggest percentage of that 1.5 million are under 12 years old. Now, sooner or later, maybe it has already revert back to cannibalism. It'll have to. So anyhow, they have these people on these tours. They go back to the hotel at night and have a toddy, have dinner, talk about the day's events. And they talk about the stench that is so overwhelming. Can you imagine 1.5 million people shitting in the streets? Even in the Middle Ages, in the worst times in London and the big cities, it wasn't that bad. It was bad, but it wasn't that bad. And then you say, well, I thought these people were equal. I thought all men and women were created. No, not the women. No, they're not created equal. Just the men. So anyhow, this guy, so the guy on the show was pretty perceptive, and he was treating the guy real nice. But still, he said, "Well, why didn't you do that? Why don't you do that here?" And the guy fumbled around for 2 minutes, giving some excuse why he didn't do it here. Well, you know why he didn't do it here, because he's making a ton of money with his foundation. No matter how he's hiding it, no matter how he's sliding it into his bank account, he's making a fortune. And then he had the gall to say, well, most white people come over here just to observe or exploit. Well, for a degree, that's true. But, you know, I've always had this sort of, in a little bit of this might is right type thinking, that how can you exploit people who are unexploitable? If the Negro can be enslaved and put on a plantation, and he doesn't rise up and kill all the slave masters, because there was a lot more of them than there were of the white overseers, and those blacks on the plantation could have rose up at any time and murdered everybody and come together with guys from the other plantation and formed an army and marched against the white law and probably just walked right over them with machetes. But they didn't do that. So if you are enslavable, then maybe you deserve to be enslaved. I know that's a little harsh, but I think it's a natural order of things. Because they tried to enslave the Mongol Indians. I don't like to say Indians. They're Mongols. But it didn't work. The Mongols would either break out, run away, kill somebody and escape, or they'd actually die because they couldn't stand being enslaved. The white man can only be enslaved physically for a certain length of time, and then he breaks loose like he always has. Of course, he's worse enslaved now because of Wall Street and the predatory capitalists. And the beauty of it is most of them don't think they're enslaved. They're in a prison, but they don't. They look and say, "Oh, it'd be terrible to be in a prison like San Quentin." But you're in a big prison, you idiot. You're slave because they've got thousands and thousands of laws that if you don't do what the law says, you're going away, man. You're going to die or something, you know. So anyhow, just think. The guy's taking in all his money. He could go down here to South Chicago. There's a hell of a lot of black kids that could use some help down there. Oh, no, I got to go to Africa because I'm the great white hunter. I'm the great, you know, sort of like the Amazon women in the old comic books. Remember when in the old comic books there was a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman living in the jungle that led all the niggers around? Do you remember those comic books? I sure as hell do. Anytime a white man would say anything, and yes, Buona, yes, Buona. And Tarzan, he not only had the blacks doing what he wanted them to do, and he was protecting the blacks most of the time. He spent all his time saving the blacks' ass down there in Africa. But he also had the animals on his side, man. He could call up the animals and say, attack, and they take care of things. Tarzan, he was one Nazi bastard. No, he was a great white man. Well, let's go back up to Leith, North Dakota. I'm sorry, I apologize, but I do want to keep an eye on this situation. Bismarck, North Dakota. The man prosecuting a white supremacist, who unsuccessfully tried to turn a small North Dakota town of Leith that only had 20 people living in it with dirt streets into an all-white enclave where he was going to build a building like the Empire State Building. No. Says an investigative report ordered by a judge is riddled with errors. Oh, the court wouldn't have something filled with errors, would they? Grant County State's Attorney Todd Schwartz on Monday stopped short of saying the report submitted to Judge David Reich late last week could jeopardize a plea agreement the prosecutor reached with white supremacist Craig Cobb. However, Schwartz said, quote, I would hope the judge can see the inaccuracies and the illegal conclusions that have been reached based on inaccuracies and improper data, unquote. Defense attorney Ryan Heinz did not immediately respond to an Associated Press request for comment on Monday, and we'll get even with him, says the press. The report is sealed. Reich ordered it late February after Cobb agreed to plead guilty to reduced charges in order to avoid further jail time. And see, he's still in jail. He's going to be there forever. They're never going to come to agreement on this thing. Anyhow, Cobb's sentencing has been scheduled for April 29th. Reich can accept or reject the plea agreement, which calls for Cobb to be on supervised probation for 4 years. Oh, gee. Which means he's not going to be able to travel much. But I think they want him out of North Dakota. Maybe they'll send him down to, well, who knows where. No longer own guns. He can't own guns anymore. If he rejects it, Cobb could withdraw his guilty pleas. And then he could sit in jail for another 6 months waiting on a trial. Cobb, 62, has been held at Mercer County Jail since mid-November after his arrest for terrorizing charges for allegedly scaring townsfolk while he was carrying out an unarmed patrol in Leith. Cobb said his actions were in response to violence and harassment directed at him, and I understand they did. Cobb mailed the AP a letter he received from the West Central Human Service Center in Bismarck summarizing the results of tests he underwent of the pre-sentence investigation, which I told him he should have refused, but Cobb has not listened to one piece of advice I gave him from the very beginning, so forget that. including personality issues or a problem with anger management. The Human Service Center did not recommend mental health or addiction services. I mean, when you put yourselves in the hand of these psychiatrists and psychologists, you're playing Russian roulette. Because they can come up and say, yeah, you're right. You're right, Mr. Prosecutor. He's liable to go kill somebody any minute. He was on the verge right there. You see, he was just like that damn Glenn Miller down there. And if it wasn't for the sheriff interceding, he was going to kill everybody in Leith. Yeah, that's what the psychiatrist can come up with. When I told Cobb he was a fool for answering their questions, well, my attorney. Well, okay. Told the AP in a telephone interview Monday, and let me tell you, folks, AP is the very worst one. They're never going to say anything nice about you. Anyhow, that he hopes the report will help influence the judge to accept the plea deal. Oh, you're going to end up 99 years in the electric chair. Cobb was charged with 7 felony counts of terrorizing. Well, only one, I think, was terrorizing, that carried a maximum total punishment of 35 years in jail. Goes up every time they talk about it. In late February, he pleaded guilty to 5 misdemeanor menacing charges and 1 felony terrorizing count. But he didn't do that. And he... halfway decent jury, at least all you need is one, would have said that's bullshit. I mean, on my civil trial up there, unfortunately, in a civil trial you need 2 jurors, but I had one, and if it had been a criminal trial, I'd have walked. I mean, I did walk, but I mean, I was they got the house and like that, but you only need one on a jury, and get an out-of-town jury. You couldn't have a Leith jury. They're a hanging bunch. But Reich ordered an investigation to gather more information before deciding Cobb's punishment. How can we make it any worse than it is? Can we get this Canadian thing in there? Can't we figure out something? We know he was thinking about killing somebody. Swartz said he will be working to correct what he views as inaccuracies in the report. Well, that probably won't help Cobb because he's the prosecutor. Though he did not elaborate, he said it is not even sure if the report recommends prison time for Cobb. Cobb said if he is released from jail, he will petition another state to accept him. Yeah, they're going to be excited about taking him in, which would be a requirement of his probation. He declined to say which state. That's because he has no idea which state would take him. Quote, I feel I've done my responsibility. I'd like to retire from the white nationalism. Unquote, he said. Well, good for you, Craig, because you weren't doing much good for white nationalism. I think most of the people that call themselves white nationalists should retire from white nationalism. Because you do more harm than you do good. You see, a lone wolf out there is not proclaiming he's this and that. He's just moving around working within society. And even if he says some things that work against the white struggle, it's only one guy. But when you go to town and you bring the Hollywood Nazis and everybody else to town and some other losers, that affects a lot of people. It's hard for people to forgive you or be nice to you. Goodbye, Craig. The one good thing about it, I guess, that came out, I got a lot in Leith. Now, what are we going to build on that lot? Let's see. Monuments, McDonald's hamburger stands, make it a Somalian refugee center, to help the Somalians escape the persecution in Somaliland. Gee, there's all kinds of things we could do with that lot. Let's think about it. Well, the graduating class from Harvard in 2018 will be a lot more fucked up than previous years. Pardon my French. And move over, Jew boys. While some of the top Ivy League schools in the U.S. only accept 5 to 10% of the students who apply, newly released data reports that Harvard University accepted 2,023 students out of the 34,295 applicants for the class of 2018. Out of the accepted students, 11.9% are black. I guess they found one guy who's 9% black. While Latino mestizo invaders make up 12.1%. The record for the university. And I told you a long time ago the Mexicans are going to surpass the blacks very quickly. Per the Journal of Blacks in Higher Education, Harvard typically receives a black student yield of about 70%. Therefore, we can estimate that there will be about 165 to 170 Negro students in this, African Americans in this fall's entering class. Happy days are here again. Ah, ha, ha, ha. It's going to be wonderful. Harvard's going to be negrified. Black students only made up 14% of the U.S. college enrollment in 2008. Obviously, it's all white racism, working class white racism, not ruling class racism. 10.8, yeah, when you talk about Harvard, you're not talking about white working class, you're talking about the idle rich. 10.8% of Harvard students were black, while Princeton reported 8.2%. They're falling way behind the curve. And Yale had 7%. Oh, Yale, who'd want to go there? They only got 7% Negroes. David Lammy, a black MP, member of the Parliament, former higher education minister, and Harvard lawyer, speculates that Harvard has higher minority acceptance rate compared with any other Ivy League school because of its outreach practices. They're going out in this Harlem, standing on the street corner, and say, come on here, nigga. We're going to take you off to Harlem. We're going to make you a star. Harvard sends admission recruiters to every state in the U.S. every year. You can even find one standing on the border down there in Mexico, welcoming them in, because we all know we're all equal, man. David Lammy, a black MP, member of Parliament, former higher education. Wait a minute. Oh, I read that before. In addition to their recruitment practices, we're going to eliminate this recruiting anybody out of the white working class. You know, we hardly ever had anybody like that. But we're not going to. They got to move over because we got new people in town. Harvard also encourages low-income students to apply for financial assistance. Well, guess who they're going to say mostly is the low-income? 15% of Harvard's enrollees received federal Pell Grants in the 2008 to 2009 academic year. More than 60% of the students admitted to Harvard this year will receive need-based scholarships averaging more than $40,000, which will mostly go to people of color. They leave that out. About 46% of black, and I'll bet you a whole lot of Jews get in under that too. About 46% of the black undergraduate students receive Pell Grants. Two of the Harvard-admitted black students have made recent headlines. Kwasi Enan, a Long Island teen who was accepted to all 8 Ivy League universities, and Avery Coffrey, who was admitted to 5 and hails from the prestigious Benjamin Banneker Academic High School in Washington, D.C., BBAHS is known for having an impeccable track record with college acceptance rates. 100% of students who apply to college have been accepted since 1984. Well, let's see here now. What are these brilliant Negroes going to major in school? Oh, I know. Political science and sociology. Yeah, you can't fail those classes. And back, maybe, do they still have basket weaving for Negroes? I don't know. If they bring any in from Africa, that would be something they need to know. Well, I got sad news for you sports idiots out there. Only 8.3% of Major League Baseball players on opening day rosters identified themselves as black, according to a newly released report by the MLB Association, marking a steep decline in the number of black baseball players since Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 67 years ago. Well, Jackie Robinson didn't do anything. Branch Rickey did that, a white man. If Branch Rickey hadn't been around, Jackie Robinson would never even have been known to anybody, much less playing the big leagues. It's always some white asshole that does this kind of stuff because it makes him feel good as long as it doesn't cost him any money. And if he can make money on a black player, oh yeah. The MLB Diversity Task Force has narrowed down the possible reasons that result in the underrepresentation of blacks on the field. Well, it might be because you've filled it up with mestizo types, Latin types from the Caribbean. That's all I see out there. And they are partially Negro, most of them. I mean, you know, most of them are mulatto, and some of them even have a big flat nose. For one, baseball is expensive. In order to transition from little league to high school, college, and minor league programs, many players are forced to register with expensive travel teams. Some coaches who front the cost require players to sign agreements that will pay them back if they get drafted to the majors. Oh, pay back? Come on. This creates problems for the players in low-income communities because they don't save their fucking money and they drink booze all the time and they screw around and so they don't have the money. The lack of training facilities and camps in these communities, well, we should have urban renewal and tear down half of the ghetto and build baseball camps. Makes sense to me. Also alienates black players from the sport, especially, well, they're too busy selling drugs, for Christ's sake. Why would you want to play baseball when you can make a fortune dealing drugs? Especially since most training camps are in more affluent areas and are for profit. Secondly, Division I college baseball programs only offer the total value of 11.7 scholarships, which are typically then divided among many players. This makes it unrealistic for students from, they always say low-income families. You know what they mean. This makes it unrealistic for students from nigger families to get funding necessary to cover tuition and expenses. You know, most of it, they're talking about blacks. You know, low-income, that's a code word. That's the ruling class code word for Negroes. Take me, for example, New York Yankees pitcher C.C. Sabathia said, quote, "If I had a choice, I would have to go to college to play football because my mom couldn't afford to pay whatever the percent was of my baseball scholarship. So I hadn't been first-round pick. I would have gone to college to play football because I had a full ride if I did that, plus all those white cheerleaders, man. Yeah. I didn't learn a goddamn thing. I mean, I can't even count, but I can play football." Quote, all factors in, how are you going to tell a kid from the hood, the black hood, that I can give you a 15% scholarship to go play baseball or full ride to go to Florida State for football? Well, what about cricket and soccer? What are you going to pick? It's not even an option, unquote. Sabathia believes the disconnect happens right around that age. Quote, little league is not a problem, he said. kids love to play Little League from 5 to 12, and they've got a great program. It's from 12 to 15. It's getting them from Little League to high school baseball is where we lose them, because they're making too much money selling crack to football, to the streets, to basketball, to everything. But they're still driving Lexuses around and making too damn much money. They don't want to play the football. They leave the football to the Caribbeans. Those dirt poor Caribbeans with no shoes, they come up here. Yeah, us black guys, we want to drive the Lexus, man, so we sell drugs. Sabatha went on to identify other contributing factors, one that could be out of the league's control. Baseball is a sport where you learn how to play catch with your dad, he said. There's a lot of single-parent homes in the inner city, so it's hard to get kids to play because there ain't no dad. I was out here throwing this goddamn ball, bouncing it off the fence because there ain't no dad. How can I get good at this baseball? Why, it's ridiculous. I think I'll, I don't know what I'll do, but I ain't quitting selling drugs because, man, I got that Lexus out there. I even got colored lights under the dash. I got me a white bitch whore, man. She does anything I want her to do. Yeah. Screw nigger ball. I don't want to do nigger ball. I want to make money. More money. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I've exhausted my intellectual capabilities. And I can't figure any more ways of offending you today. So I'll dream up some more for tomorrow. Or if you got some clues on how I can offend you more, well, or have all your friends listen to this radio show. If you want to give them apoplexy, if you want to give your friends, your nigger ball friends, a heart attack, play this show for them. Put it on a loudspeaker. Like, remember the Blues Brothers with that giant speaker on top of the car? Put a tape recorder in your car and play this radio show and drive very quickly through Harlem, man. Very quickly. Don't stop at the stoplights. 14-5.
Cerebrum has suffered massive and irreparable damage.
You never know what has happened to him.
Had I not been sure of this, I would not have permitted him to live.
Where?
Father?
What happened?
I need help.
What is democracy? What is democracy?
Got something to do with young men killing each other, I believe.
When it comes to my turn, will you want me to go?
For democracy. Any man would give his only begotten son.
Celebrated individual to experience pain, pleasure, memory, dreams, or thought of any kind. This young man will be as unfeeling, as unthinking as the dead until the day he joins them.
I don't know whether I'm alive and dreaming or dead and remembering.
How can you tell what's a dream and what's real when you can't even tell when you're awake and when you're asleep?
Where am I?
I never know. Anything. Can't tell if this is true or dream. Deep down inside I feel the scream. The terrible silence stops me. Now that the war is through with me, I'm waking up, I cannot see that there's not much left in me. Nothing is real but pain now. Hold my breath as I wait for care.
He's went ahead and chopped off every. Oh, God. Please make them hear me. They won't listen. They won't hear me.
If you don't wake me up, I'll be like this for years.
Hear me.
Back in the room, it's much too real. Improvise that I'm a steal. But can't look forward to reveal. Look to the time when I live. Fed to the good that sticks in me. Just like a wartime novelty. Tied to machines that make me be. Cut this life off from me.
Hold my breath as I wish. Oh, please, God, wake me.
Just like a piece of meat that keeps on living. It won't always be like this, will it?
I can't live like this. I can't. Please, no, I can't. I can't. Help me. Somebody please help me. Mother, where are you? Help me, Mother.
Help me.